were identified areas of Texas that had CCP underground. There was movement of, you know, non-authorized military vehicles that were being stored or kept in certain areas there. So I think that that's a huge chunk of what we see going on. You know, what is the cabal doing with the electrical grids? We have unlimited energy. It's a way for them to make money off of us. So all of this they're doing to prep so that people don't have an option. You have to have food, you have to have water, you have to have shelter. And it will drive people to a point where you have no option but to go to the FEMA camps or the government set up areas for assistance. You know, what's the first thing they're going to do is these people come, no weapons. You know, they're going to disarm everybody. And it's a way of forced control. What I'm seeing is that they're not investing the money to solve the problem. So why are these soldiers that they've spent millions of dollars on all of a sudden expendable?
Jeez. Okay, that's huge. And do you think it's also to make sure that the United States, I mean, we still have a big armed forces, but do you think it's also to weaken our armed forces?
Well, I do. You know, how can you, you know, you've got these people then who are released back into their home environments, but the majority of them supposedly now are not surviving. So, you know, the only people that it seems like they're keeping are those that they have direct control over. You know, they're not even concerned if they lose those who are released, which, you know, it's like in a time of war, you're going to draft, you're going to call back. The first people you're going to want to call back in a draft are those who you've already invested money in, you know, are loyal, they know the rules, and you know, they're able to fight. And, you know, that's easier than taking all brand new recruits in the draft who have no idea, have never been in combat, don't know how to work the weapons. I mean, you're starting at ground zero.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking militarily wise, it makes no sense at all what is going on. It's like they're just blowing through people.
It's very strange. Okay. I have some more questions that I wanted to ask you. Lately, I've been talking a lot about the cult mind and the programming of the masses. And then it's very scary to see so many people who are in a childlike state and not able to broaden themselves. It really, that's what it feels like. Like we kind of grew up, a lot of us grew up watching, starting to get exposed to so much information. It was like a growing up experience, becoming an adult almost. And, you know, it was before they really cracked down on censorship on the internet, and still we have access to that. And so many of us grew up in that experience. I call it a growing up phase, almost becoming an adult, learning about all these things. But there are so many people that are still stuck in a childlike state. And I think that's the best way to depict it or to describe it. How do we deprogram them, if you will? They keep talking about us being deprogrammed. You can't deprogram people like me because I've learned things, right? Because I've learned the truth, you're going to try to deprogram me. In reality, we need to figure out how to deprogram them so they can start learning and starting to open their eyes and what's really going on. How do we deprogram them? You know, based on all your experience with these programs that the systems puts people through, you know, they're doing it to people en masse. How do we realistically do it? Because I can tell you, just sharing facts doesn't seem to be working. It does a little bit with the younger people, like the teenagers and things. It seems like they are starting to really respond to it. But like my daughter's age and my son's age, those kids, if they're exposed to it, maybe because they're young and their mind is still open, but there's so many people that are, they won't look at facts and won't look at anything. So how do we go about deprogramming it?
Yeah. So the first thing you have to remember is that with the programming, it's more than just a physical or mental program. It's connected spiritually as well. And, you know, what I had learning how to program and about the programs, you know, the best way to describe it is that each person's mind is kind of like a file cabinet. So let's say, you know, they want to, you know, instead of forcing beliefs on people or forcing people to make a choice that they're morally and ethically opposed to, we had talked last time,
yep,
how they manipulate the mind constructs. So they make it seem like it fits with your morals, your ethics, and then you feel good about, you know, going along with that belief or whatever they're wanting you to do. You willingly go along with it. And so if you think of each of those constructs, you know, as a file drawer, you know, the old system was that, you know, as they were building a drawer in your mind, each of those files is going to be a traumatic event or assault. So we still have that happening, even with this pandemic. You know, one of the first assaults that people, you know, they're not used to, that fear that's created when they go to the store, you know, they're used to seeing an abundant supply of food and household things, whatever they want being available at those stores. But they go to the stores now and they see not every item that they want is going to be there. Their choices are limited. On top of, the amount of things is limited. So it may not be there the next time they go. So even the little things like that, like limiting how much product a store can put out, that causes a traumatic event for that person. It causes that fear response. That's what they want to trigger, is that as they trigger each different fear response, they're connecting spiritually a spirit with that response. So that fear, you know, if you don't rise above it, if you don't turn to the Lord and say, okay, I'm going to trust that my food doesn't come from the store, it doesn't come from, you know, the butcher, the baker, whoever, you know, that the Lord will provide my need. If that is not your response, then now you have this being that is controlling that emotional, spiritual fear. And so it kind of just goes along with that mind construct. Each construct is going to have a different spiritual being that has control. So that's the first part of the program, is that each file is going to have a spiritual being connected to it that is now controlling things. So even money, you know, on Right on Radio, Jeff and I have been bringing out a bunch about the spirit mammon. A lot of people forget about that spirit, but he's the one that is in control of all the financial things that are going on. So how do you, you know, take back control of that money so that you're no longer serving the spirit mammon? You have to rebuke and cast out that spirit, and you have to trust the Lord with your finances. So, you know, a lot of the deprogramming that we see happening, and I'm not saying all, there are good individuals out there who are doing deprogramming. You know, you've got a few of the programmers for the system who have come out and, you know, have come to that place of freedom in their life where they're now able to instruct others in how to undo that programming. But what I see is that a lot of them approach it from a mental and psychological aspect. So, you know, they open the file drawer and they say, okay, you had a trauma here. Let's address that trauma. And so they do that, but they forget to address the spirit that got connected through that trauma. So what we see happen is that people get what I call a Band-Aid. They've got this wound and a Band-Aid is put on it, but the wound is deep and then it gets infected, it festers. And, you know, they may be able to function with that Band-Aid for some time, but they never experience complete healing from that wound because there's just a Band-Aid on it. The wound doesn't get cleaned out. You know,
you have to get rid of the spirit.
That spirit doesn't get removed. And so that spirit is still there, still has control. It will lay low for a while. It will let them function, think that they have this freedom, but then that spirit will start to try to get control again. And the problems then seem to resurface and rise back up. So, you know, also what we have happening, another aspect is that the programmers who have come out, you know, the Monarch program is very vast. It was split into different aspects based on the different departments that it would be utilized in. So, you know, when you had the Monarch program that was used in with the military, you know, usually that was called the MK Ultra program. And then that could even be split further where you have specialized military groups. So they're going to have even further distinguished aspects of that MK Ultra program. Like they had the Delta, the Epsilon programs, the Orion programs, you know, it goes on and on. They had the Stargate.
God, they've just gone completely off the rails. Right. But keep going.
But each of those are different. You know, it's part of the same overall umbrella program, but they have it's variated. And the variations are based on, you know, like the Mothers of Darkness, part of their job was to assess people's spiritual gifts. And so you would figure out, you know, what is that person's spiritual gifts? What type of magic are they inclined to? What spirits have those same spiritual gifts and who can be connected with what spirits? So that's what you'd figure out. And then based on those aspects, you would say, okay, this person needs to go in the MK Ultra program, or this person's going to be trained in the religious Jesuit, you know, Masonic Catholic program. You know, these other people are going to go into, you know, other programs. So, you know, they would decide who's going into what program. So as we've had some of, you know, each of those programs would have somebody who was trained in the overall program. Like, let's just say they knew how the MK Ultra ran, but then that person is going to train people who understand just how the Epsilon program works, or another person who understands just how the Delta program works. So they get the teachers.
They're very specialized. Specific.
Right. They're specialized. So let's say somebody from the Epsilon program comes out and, you know, they're like, yes, I did programming, and now they have survivors coming to them for help for deprogramming, but the survivor who's coming to them is from the Carousel program. That person with the Epsilon programming has very specific specialized understanding and training, but it's only specific to that program. So they don't know all the ins, outs, all the access codes, all the specialties of that carousel program. So how can that person who's now coming to them experience complete healing? They can't, because that person doesn't have complete understanding of the entire program that that carousel person has gone through.
Do they also know that spirits are connected to specific things, or is it just...
Well, in the MK Ultra program, they don't use that spiritual language, because the majority of those individuals in that program are very scientific, logical, tangible minded people.
So they don't even know.
The majority of those individuals don't even believe in a spirit world. They don't believe in spirit beings, which is why they created the whole fallacy of the aliens, so that they could then connect people to aliens or galactic beings, because they were more inclined to connect to spirits that way, you know, because they won't believe in the spiritual. They won't say that they believe in anything that is not physical. So therefore the demons would take on a physical manifested form that these people now will believe. So of course they're not addressing the spiritual aspect of that at all, because they don't even believe in that spiritual aspect. So again, you know, a band-aid slapped on, the demon that's still behind everything is still in control. It's not addressed.
So what is the right way, or a better way to, because it's still, you know, these are people who are really entrenched in the program, and you have been able to fully heal people. And you've talked about that. And maybe you should just give an example now. But then I want to talk about the practical of the people who aren't in programs but are mass programmed, you know, and how we deal with that. Okay, go ahead.
So specifically, you know, one of the best extensive, you know, and I guess we have to use a different word. Instead of deprogramming, we would use the word deliverance, because now you're dealing with the demonic side, the spiritual side. And really, you know, the top programmer had built in the decode. And she would always say the decode is the Lord Jesus Christ. So even the mothers know that the decode is Jesus Christ. So the best deliverance program that I have gone through was Neil T. Anderson, and it's called The Bondage Breaker. And in there, you know, he lists all of the things that demons can be connected to. So he goes through, you know, the physical things, whether, you know, it's sexual immorality, overeating, you know, he explains all of that and what spirits would be connected to those things. He goes through the emotional, the social, and the spiritual. And then as you go through these lists, you're praying and you're saying, okay, Lord, show me, where do demons have strongholds in my life? If it's with overeating, then you're going to look at, you know, why does it have strongholds over that overeating? Is it because I've been through a certain trauma? Is it because of, you know, somebody hurt me? And then, you know, you go deeper, you know, what's behind that? Is it unforgiveness? Is it self-hatred? Is it hatred towards the other person? And then you're going to confess those things. And as we confess, those demons lose those strongholds. They no longer have those footholds. And we give the Lord lordship over those areas in our lives. So it's like, okay, Lord, when I am triggered, you know, because I'm emotional and I've learned every time I get sad and emotional that I'm going to overeat, you know, instead of doing that, I'm going to ask you, Jesus, to be Lord of that area. Help me deal with my sadness. Help me to forgive. Help me to, you know, be able to look at this in a different way so that I'm not causing self-harm to my body through this, you know, because these feelings are stimulated. So Neil T. Anderson, The Bondage Breaker, is a great book for anybody. I've walked a lot of veterans through it, a lot of survivors through that book. And I obviously healing from it. People, you know, you're not just functioning to just making it by in life. You actually have healing and freedom from those things.
That's excellent. So many people who are so angry and are so, I get frustrated. I can tell you I get frustrated, but I get frustrated because people can't see that they're harming so many people en masse. And so I'm very frustrated with that. That's what angers me, is the bigger picture stuff and how they're contributing to that. And I have to learn how to be more helpful in that way. I know that's an issue that I'm having, but so many people are very angry with anything that does. First of all, they're angry if you even talk about religion. They're anti-religion. They think we're a bunch of nutbags. They also think that they're also very childish in the sense that they think everything has to do with race and sex and just the really basics. They've been brainwashed to think that. And so they get angry at everything. They're triggered. The trigger word is what I'm trying to get at. They're triggered almost on everything.
Right.
You know, what is the deal? First of all, the Jesus Christ isn't going to work because they don't even.
Right. You can't get there with them. So you have to meet people where they're at. And, you know, I find that individuals respond better when you ask them questions. So when people come up, you know, I've had people attack me and be like, you know, I mean, I hardly put up anything, especially currently, about Trump or anything like that. But they will automatically assume, one, that I'm lying, that I'm telling, you know, all these stories, that I'm now a Q conspirator, and, you know, the list goes on and on. I'm a Trump delusional supporter. And so they'll come at me with this stuff and I'll just be like,
and what's wrong with supporting Trump? But go ahead.
I know. What? I mean, that's what I want to ask, but I don't ask that question. Instead, I'll be like, you know, what's behind this? Like, what, you know, what made you so angry? Or, you know, like you turn it back as a question to them, you know, why do you feel that people who support Trump are delusional? You know, like, I would like to know, like, what about that makes people delusional? And give them, you know, a creative platform where they can start to voice their opinions. And as they voice their opinion, you ask more and more questions.
Well, and that's good. You have to have patience to be able to do that, because, you know, I've gone to a certain point and they're always in your face and so angry every step of the way. So it's so hard. But, you know, I've been told, because Trump's a complete creep, you know, they believe he's evil to the max, and fine, whatever. It's not even about Trump, but, you know, I'm just using this as an example. Mm-hmm. And Biden's a great guy. You know, he's just such a good guy. Okay. So,
I'd be like, why do you say that? What is so great about Biden?
Biden has adrenochrome in his system. I'm just like, hello. I have to get by this. It's
here.
So hard. You know, I understand Trump's not the best, you know, example of whatever, and fine. But you know, his vocal print shows him as not having an ego and trying to do the best for people, which was very interesting for me. And that's not the vocal print you get on the other side. So for me, I have people tested. I like to see where people really are at, what's underneath all their BS propaganda, because politicians are just BS in general. So I want to know, well, what are they really thinking behind that? And so, you know, you get people tested, but beyond that, it's like, it's never truthful. You know, like I remember talking about the racist elements. I'm like, okay, you know, I guess Trump did all these things, but then here's all of Biden's, you know, and there's a list of Biden stuff. And see, that's the thing. You got to ask questions. You can't do what I did by showing them, well, okay, well, here's Trump's. Well, now here's Biden's. You know, you said that Biden was this amazing person, but he's got the same crap, if not more. So I guess I don't understand. So how do you turn that? Maybe even Trump and Biden aren't even a good one to talk about, because that's past. Maybe we should be talking about something else that we can be talking about. Maybe we should talk about the weather, you know, global warming, or because that's the same thing. You know, you're delusional because you can't see that the world's going to end in 10 years because human beings are destroying the world. It's like, well, the science doesn't show that. And so how do you deal with some of that? Go ahead, use your example.
Well, okay, so here the first lesson in deprogramming, and it's also the first lesson when they're programming, is engagement. Okay, when you are being programmed, you have individuals who are assigned to you, and those individuals, their job is to invest in you. Investment takes time. So they're going to be inviting you out for coffee. They're going to invite you over to dinner. They're going to invite you to special events. You know, maybe it's a opera, or, you know, hey, I got to go work out at the gym. Why don't you come work out with me? Okay. And as you go and you spend this time together, you're conversating. And in those conversations, they're directing the narrative, what they want you to think, believe. You know, they'll give a negative reaction or response verbally or non-verbally when you're having that conversation that you will see. And everybody's natural response is that you don't want to make the person who's investing in you unhappy. So when you see that negative response, it automatically directs you in the opposite direction. So this is how they work the program. So when we think backwards, you know, we've got this mass amount of people, and, you know, it's really hard unless you've got individuals who have a means to do mass deprogramming. It's just hard to do mass deprogramming. Really, what has to happen is that we need more people who are engaged with individuals in their communities. And you have to be going to your neighbor saying, hey, you know, yeah, we've got to follow these social, you know, distancing protocols. God. But hey, what do you say? We can walk 3 feet apart down the road and go to the coffee shop. You know, I'd love to just really hang out. Let's go have some coffee and talk. And then you start these conversations. And a lot of times, if you just let people verbally process, and you do that by asking questions, you know, you're asking their opinion, you go without that agenda, you know, of I'm going to change your mind today. You have to take away that time limit and say, okay, I'm just going to hang with this person. And this may take a while. It may take a couple months, but through these conversations, you're going to see that as you ask more and more questions, that they're changing. You know, you're able to direct their mind to realize what really is going on.
You know, it's easier for me to do that with the younger people, I think, because they're my kids' age and I can accept their ignorance because I know that they're growing, and I know my own kids just haven't been exposed to things. You know, it takes a while for them to learn. But when it comes to people older, I have less patience. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't. I had a friend of mine, John Paul Rice. He said, Sarah, you got to look at everyone like you do your children, and like they're a child that deserves love, and that they are where they're at. And if you can do that, then you can help anybody. And that was probably the best advice I've ever been given, because it's so hard for me to accept older people for being so clueless, you know?
Right. And usually within, you know, most people don't know this, but there's a difference between listening and attentive listening. Usually within the first 30 seconds of your conversation, a person will tell you what they need, what they're struggling with, and, you know, what their biggest challenge is. So just simply, you know, meeting up with somebody and saying, how's your day going? Within that first 30 seconds, they will tell you what their greatest challenge, problem, and needs are. And if you focus on those things, then that person is going to feel invested in. They're going to open up more. They're going to feel like they can trust you because they know that you're listening. And you don't even have to solve the problem. You just have to acknowledge it.
Show that you care.
So if they're like, you know, oh, I've, you know, this week's been crummy. I've been having really rough time sleeping. Well, now you make that part of the conversation. Why are you having such a rough time sleeping? This also gives you great follow-up. The next time you see them, hey, how's your sleeping been going this week? I know you don't believe in prayer, but I've been praying that you have better sleep. Has it been better? No, it's gotten worse. Oh man, that must say something about my praying. I guess I got to work on praying better. You know, I mean, you kind of make it something that the two of you can laugh about. And now you've gotten this relationship with somebody and they know that you care. They know that you're investing. And I hate to say it, but this is the best way. You don't get that in a clinical experience. When you, as a survivor, you know, and that's the thing, the majority of people don't even realize they've been programmed. They're not going to be seeking clinical help. And if you seek that clinical help, they get a professional relationship. It's different.
It's not the same thing, but it's partly why keeping us socially distanced is so negative, is because the socially distancing is keeping it from us having that community and those bonds with people to help people see that they're being manipulated and controlled. And if they're kept out of those relationships, they're more easily programmed by the TV and by the social media versus by the community, that where we can talk through these things and make more rational sense of what's really going on. And so
they're also kept from those clinical relationships as well. You know, if they are struggling from depression or things where they're like, man, I need to go see a counselor, that's not one of the jobs right now that's considered essential. So counselors, you've got therapists who have limited hours. They're, you know, they may have been able to see 20 people a week in the past, and now they have to limit themselves to only seeing 8 people. How many counselors and therapists are in your area, and how many people are they able to help if they're only able to see 8 people a week?
That's just so crazy.
So you've got this access, they're cutting off the access to healthy mental, emotional, spiritual health.
The fact that we're accepting all this is just incredible. That to me is sad. Yeah. Oh, there's things that we should be fighting back on, and those are the basic things that we need to be fighting back on. But I think we need to reconnect community-wise, right? We need to reconnect with each other. And that's the only way we're going to have to fix it at the grassroots level, reconnecting, getting people to talk through stuff, to rational thought on what's really going on. Because right now, it's just unbelievable, the irrational, bad decisions. It's it would almost be humorous if it wasn't serious. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And not even feeling like you have to, voice your opinion or your thoughts. You know, that's a huge key too. If that's only going to cause arguments and strife, then you have to be willing for a time to not say anything about what you think or feel, and only listen and, you know, just be there to ask questions. And that's really hard to do.
It really is. And it's hard for, yeah, it's really hard. Well, it's hard for me to see so many adults so stunted in a childlike state, you know, and that's what I see it as. It's like they're children. My children are more adult than they are in so many ways. They're just so stunted. They're just, their growth has been stunted and they've stopped. And that's probably part of the programming. They don't want adults. They don't want rational thinking, powerful human beings that can say, hey, I'm an adult. I don't need you to control my every thought and behavior.
Right. And that's where, you know, we wait for those opportunities. You know, eventually the food supply is going to run out and they're going to come to the people who have invested in them. They're going to say, how do we get through this? And that's when you take out the fishing pole and the hooks and you say, come with me. We're going out to the river today.
We're
going to
get it done.
Teach them how to fish. And with that, you've not even said anything about, you know, it's not about Trump or programming or anything. You've gotten to the point where they're now seeking the answer. You have the answer and you're saying, okay, let's do this. Now we fish, you know?
Yeah, that's perfect. That's such a great analogy. Okay, Jesse, everybody needs to follow your work and support your work. Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on illuminatethedarkness.com. I have access to my Patreons on there, as well as you can find the link to purchase my book off of Amazon called His Kingdom Comes in Power. And you can also find me on Twitter. It's going to be my last name. I'll spell it. It's C as in cat, Z as in zebra, E, B as in boy, O-T-A-R, Jesse, J-E-S-S-I-E. And that's where I'm most active right now, if you want to follow me. So,
you know what I'd love is, I know you've had somebody translate your book into Polish, right?
Yes.
I would love to see if people would step up and translate your book into Spanish and maybe French. I know there are, right. You have so many great followers out there. And I was thinking about doing a little, not GoFundMe, because they're not a site that we can trust, but another type of fundraising thing to get somebody to translate it, or if somebody is willing to donate some time to translate that book.
Right.
So more people around the world could have access to it.
And that's what we did. You know, I've been working with different translators. So I do have somebody translating into Vietnamese. And then, you know, once they translate, they're able just to, you know, print off copies and distribute it in their country. And they use it a lot to start conversations and to get people thinking about things. So, you know, I'd love to have my stuff used in that way.
Well, that's great.
So if I'd love if people would reach out, if you've got other languages that you can translate in, I would love to work with you on that. And
that would be wonderful. Okay.
So fundraising for it would be good if people, you know, right now we do that with for
everything. I just would like to see, you know, maybe there's somebody that is looking for something to help out with their time. And they might not have the money, but they'd have a little bit of time and they could help out. That would be wonderful.
Right. And the main goal is just to get it in people's hands. I'm not in it to really make money or profit off of it, just to get it into the hands of people. So,
well, thank you so much, Jesse, for your time today. I always appreciate your time.
Yes. Thank you. We always have great conversations.